We're holding on Chof Vav Amud Aleph, the last Mishnah, second line from the bottom. We said in the previous Mishnah that after that, so we said in the previous Mishnah Yois rather, that during the Sholosh Regalim, we consider the Amir Oreth to be Tahar, even though usually throughout the Rigim Morning Aaron, even though throughout the rest of the year we say the Amir Oreth are Tameh, but on Yom Tov, the Chachamim changed that and relaxed that rule and said we consider them Tahar. We brought the Pasuk in that connection, Ke'ish Echad Chaverim, that when the Jewish people gather, Ke'ish Echad Chaverim, and they're all considered Chaverim who are not Tameh. However, and we mentioned yesterday that Rashi elsewhere says the reason is in order not to embarrass them. The Rambam says because the fact is they are Matahar themselves. Anyway, the fact is that we don't necessarily know whether they did. And certainly according to Rashi, we don't necessarily know that they did. It's just in order not to embarrass them and in order not to have that they're going to think we're staying apart from them even on Yom Tov, even when we're all gathering in the Beis Mikdash. Therefore, they're going to go build their own Beis Mikdash. So, but after Yom Tov, the fact is they were Tomei, and therefore after Yom Tov, anything that they touched retroactively is Tomei. So now, the previous Mishnah had said that after the Yom Tovim, they have to be Metaher, the Kalim of the Azara. Because after all, among the people in the Azara, so you have, say, a Kalim in the Azara that conceivably could be touched by even Yisraelim who are Amei Aretz, and then you have even the ones in the Heichel might have been touched by Koyanim who are Amei Aretz. So the Mishnah had said that after each Yom Tov, they would have to tovel all the Kalim in the Beis Mikdash. So now our Mishnah continues. Ketzad ma'avirin al-taras azara. How would they do that? How were they ma'avirin for the Tara of the Azara? Where we said yesterday that the ma'avirin has several meanings. Rashi says it means to move the kalim from their places and tovel them. The Tosfos Rid says it means to announce. And the Me'iri says that means they set aside all their other jobs in order to do that. Anyway, how do they do that? Matbilinus ha'kalim shahoyu b'mikdash. They would tovel all the kalim that were in the Beis Mikdash, in case the Amei Aretz had touched them. V'omrin lahem, however, they would tell the Kohenim, the Amei Aretz, to begin with, even during the Yom Tov, hizaharu, be careful, shalei tigu b'shulchan, that you don't touch the Shulchan. Because the Shulchan, specifically, as we're going to see in the Gemara, you're not able to move it and tovel it, because the lechem upon him has to constantly be on it. So therefore, if the Amei Aretz were to touch the Shulchan during the Yom Tov, and we're talking necessarily Koyanim, Amei Aretz, because the Shulchan is inside the Heichel, Yisraelim have no business going in there anyway. But among the Koyanim, if the Amei Aretz touch it, there's going to be a problem, because after Yom Tov, then they're not going to be able to tovel it. So they have to warn the Amei Aretz, even during the Yom Tov itself, not to touch the Shulchan. Continues the Mishnah. Kol ha-kelim shayu b'mikdash, yesh lahem shniyim u'shlishim. All of the kelim that they had in the Beis Mikdash, they had duplicates and triplicates. The purpose was she'im nitmu harishonim. This way, in case the first one becomes tameh, yoviu shniyim tachteim, then they can use the second one instead. Now, after Yom Tov, when we're toveling the kelim, which kelim do they need to tovel? So all of them require tevilah, which would include the shulchan, which is why we said, therefore, we tell them not to touch the shulchan in the first place. With the exception of the two mizbechas, the golden mizbeach that's inside the heichel and the kapu mizbeach that's outside in the azara, because those are considered like the ground. Namely, the outer Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the Pasuk calls it Mizbach Adama. The Pasuk says it should be a Mizbeach of Ut. And what that means is, actually, that the Mizbeach HaChitzen, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, was made of pieces of wood that were joined together to make a box shape, but it had no top. Every time that they were, whenever in the desert, where every time they set up a Mishkan and camp, they would fill up the inside of the mizbeach hachitzon with dirt. So therefore, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer says, therefore, the mizbeach hachitzon is considered like the ground because the pasuk calls it mizbeach adama, and therefore the mizbeach hazahav, as we're going to say in the Gemara, is like that as well. Even though the mizbeach hazahav is not like that, it had a top. It didn't. It wasn't filled up with earth. It was the pashto is a solid block of wood. Nevertheless, it still has the same din, says Rabbi Eliezer. It's considered like Adama, as we'll see in the Gemara. In the Beis Mikdash, by the way, it's not so simple. I mean, on the face of it, the Mizbeach in the Beis Mikdash was made out of stones. And in that case, of course, it's not Makabel Tumah. It's literally attached to the ground. However, based on various psukim and various other things, it seems that maybe there were at least certain times during the time during the period of the Beis Mikdash when they did, in fact, have a Mizbeach and a Choshes, and then you would still have, then this din would be applicable. When they had a mizbeach made out of stone that was built on the ground, then of course that's not makabel tumah either. But anyway, that's what Rabbi Eliezer says, that Rabbi Eliezer says that the mizbeaches are not makabel tumah because they're considered like the ground. The Chachamim say because they're plated, meaning they're plated with gold and copper respectively. Now, what does that do? What does that have to do with them being tameh or with them being makabel tumah or not? We'll discuss in the Gemara a couple of possibilities what the Chachamim mean by that. So the Gemara starts off. Tana, we learn in a Braisa that when they told them not to touch the Shulchan, they actually told them, Hizaru shematigu v'shulchan uva menorah. A Braisa actually has the version that says that they would tell the Amei Ha'aretz, the Kohenim, the Amei Ha'aretz, who, when they're coming in, let's say to, Rashi says, they could be coming into the Heichel in order to bow to Hashem over there. Generally, you can't just go into the Heichel for no particular purpose. So they're going in there either to do the Avodah or to bow to Hashem. So if they're going in for that, so they would warn them, that says the Braisa, not only not to touch the Shulchan, but also not to touch the Menorah. There are, by the way, in the printed Mishnayos, you can find ones that also say the word of Amenurta, but the Mephoshim on the Mishnah, the Batanura and so forth, explain that that doesn't belong over there because our Gemara is going to say specifically that or that the Mishnah, that the Tana of our Mishnah did not include the Menorah. So therefore, so the Braisa holds it, but the Tana of our Mishnah disagrees. So the Tana did dan my time of Tony Menorah. So why indeed does the Tana of our Mishnah not mention the menorah? And the reason is Shulchan k'siv beit tamid, menorah like k'siv batamid. Because the difference is by the menorah, it doesn't by the Shulchan, it says that you have to have lechem ponim, you have to have a lechem ponim lufonai tamid in front of me on it tamid constantly. So therefore, there always has to be bread on the Shulchan, and therefore they can't take it off in order to tovel the Shulchan. As opposed to the menorah, the menorah doesn't say tamid. Now it does. It says by the menorah that me'erev ad boker tamid. However, the tamid over there doesn't mean that it has to be burning 24/7. What it means is that every day you have to give it enough oil to burn from the evening until the morning. So therefore, so fine. The lamps go out in the morning, and then they would be able to take it out and tovel it. But when it says about the Shulchan Tamid, it means the Lachem Aponim has to be on there all the time, with the exception of they take off the old Lachem Aponim on Shabbos and put the new Lachem Aponim on the same Shabbos. There's actually, in fact, the Mishnah in Menachos, in fact, describes how they would have, there's two different opinions over there, but one opinion is that you could just have, they take off the lechem aponim and then they replace it later on the same day. So it doesn't matter if it's without lechem for a couple of hours. I think that's Rabbi Yosi Bibihuda says that, but the chachamim over there say that what you actually have to have is literally as one group of kohenim is pulling off the old lechem aponim, another group has to be putting on lechem aponim, to be standing right opposite them, sliding new lechem aponim into place. So the shulchan can't remain without lechem aponim, according to that opinion, for even a moment. And even according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda, it's only on Shabbos that they remove it. And Shabbos, you can't be toveling the kalim. So therefore, so that's why they would warn the Amei Ha'aretz not to touch the Shulchan, but that's why the Tana of our Mishnah doesn't mention the Menorah, because the Menorah, no problem, you can tovel it during the day, which is, it doesn't have to be burning during that time. Actually, Tosfos points out, you did have the Ner Ma'aravi, you had the one of the lamps of the Menorah that would burn longer than the other ones, that was a special simen for the Jewish people, that Hashem was on their side. So during the time when the Jewish people were acting correctly, then the Ner Ma'aravi would burn longer than the other ones. Tosfos says, okay, the fact is, it's still not required. I mean, the fact is, it would burn all day, but it didn't necessarily. It depended whether Oisin with Sona Shel Makom or not. So they would always light it first because they light all the other ones from it, but not necessarily would it be burning through the whole day. If it was, then yeah, obviously they wouldn't be able to take it out to Tovel it either. But therefore, our Tana doesn't mention, the Tana of our Mishnah, therefore, doesn't mention the menorah. The idoch, so what would the Tana of the Braise answer to that? He would say, Kivin dechtid v'asa menorah noicha hashochan. Fine, it's true, the menorah doesn't have to be lit 24-7. But since the Pasuk says the menorah has to be opposite the shochan, kiman dechtid batomid dummy, then that's as if it said tomid by it. It means, in other words, that as long as the shochan there, the menorah is there, the menorah has to be opposite it. Well, since we're saying the shochan has to be there 24-7 with the lechem upon him on it, then therefore so does the menorah, says the Tana of the Braise. Therefore, they couldn't take out the menorah and tovel it either. Therefore, they'd have to warn the Amei Oretz not to touch it. The idach, what about, what would the Tana of our Mishnah answer to that? He would say, that's not what the Pasuk means, that as long as the Shulchan is there, the menorah has to be there. That Pasuk is just coming to tell us where the menorah should be. The Pasuk tells us that you place the Shulchan in, so you place the menorah in the Heichal, you place the Shulchan on the north side, and then it says Vesa Menorah, Nochach HaShulchan, and the menorah has to be opposite the Shulchan, so it's just telling you where it's supposed to be. And in Menachos, when it discusses the layout and the positioning of the Kalim, then it says, it mentions over there that the Shulchan and the Menorah were equal distances from their respective walls. The Shulchan was 2.5 amas from the closest wall, and the Menorah was 2.5 amas from the closest wall. But nothing to do, says the Tana of our Mishnah, with that the Menorah has to be there all the time that the Shulchan is there. You could very well have, if the Menorah becomes Tomei, they can take it out and total it. Now, the Gemara asks, so we're saying in the Mishnah that if the Kohenim, if the Amei Oretz, the Kohenim, the Amei Oretz touch the Shulchan, then you have a problem because you can't tovel it because the Lachem Aponim needs to be on it constantly. By the way, this stuff, the Lachem Aponim has to be on it constantly. What's the idea behind it? There's an explanation in Mephoshim. Through the Shulchan, Hashem sent down Shefa and Parnasa to the world. You have, I think the Ramban talks about this, Alderach, like you have, for example, with the story of Eliyahu, and then with the story of Elisha, where there was a tiny bit of oil, and in the case of Eliyahu, the widow who was taking care of him had a tiny bit of flour, and a bracha from Hashem rested on it, and therefore she continued to have flour, and she continued to have oil. So in the same way, the bracha of Hashem always needs to rest on something. So there has to be bread on the Shulchan at all times, and that way the bracha of Hashem can rest on that, and then from that, the rest of the Jewish people, that from that, there can be bracha for parnasa for the Jewish people wherever they are. If the bread is removed from the Shulchan, then you're losing that. So that, therefore, it has to be there constantly. So the point is, we're saying then that the Shulchan is able to be makabel tuma. Now the question is why? But typically, we should be able to say, we should be able to anyway say that the Shulchan is not Makabel Tumah. The Kli Eitz HaOtzer L'Nachasu. After all, the Shulchan is a wooden keli that's meant to stay in one place. V'chol Kli Eitz HaOtzer L'Nachasu L'Metame. And such a wooden keli that's not meant to be moved around from place to place is not Makabel Tumah. My time, the Dumya Desak Be'inan. And the reason is because wooden kelim to be Makabel Tumah have to be similar to a sack. You have in the Pasuk, in Parashat Shemini, when it talks about the concept of Tumas Kalim, it mentions a couple of different materials over there. It mentions wooden Kalim or clothing or leather or sack. So sack would be, a sack is a type of cloth as well, but it's a coarser cloth that's used for sacking. The point is that we have a comparison, we have a hekesh between wooden kalim and sacks. So therefore, wooden kalim is makabel tumah only if it's similar to a sack. Ma sack metalta moligarekam. A sack can be carried around empty or full. Afko metalta moligarekam. Therefore, anything, any wooden kalim that's going to be makabel tumah is only makabel tumah only if it's also carried both full and empty. Now, for example, Rashi explains that that tells us, therefore, that clay eitz ha'asuyin b'midah are not makabel tumah. We have, for example, in the Mishnayos of Shloisha Trisenhain, you have a couple of examples of that, where it's v'abah b'midah, Torah miklum, where you have a wooden keli that holds more than 40 sa of liquids. or more, or 60 sav dry, dry can be heaped up on top, so therefore it can hold more of that. Such a large wooden keli is not makabel truma, because if you tried to move it, you could move it around empty, but if you try to move it around full, it's going to break under the weight. So therefore, such a keli is not makabel truma. By the same token, then, a wooden keli that's never meant to be moved is not makabel truma. The shulchan is not meant to be moved. Why is it makabel truma anyway? Now, of course, Tosfos asked the obvious question. I mean, they moved it during all the 40 years in the desert. Okay, first Tosfos says that maybe we're talking about once they came into Eretz Yisrael and set up the Mishkan in various semi-permanent places. So, for example, in Shiloh, let's say the Mishkan was in Shiloh for 369 years. So then, fine, during all that time, they're not moving it around from place to place. So therefore, you can say it's a keli that's not meant to be moved. But also Tosfos says, listen, I mean, even the fact is, even in the Midbar, they didn't just move the Shulchan by itself. They moved it together with all the other Kalim, so we can't really call it a Kali that's made to be carried. They did carry it, but only together with the other Kalim, as opposed to when we talk about a Kali that's Metalto Mole Verekam, we mean that it's carried by itself. So the question is now, so the Shulchan shouldn't be Makabel Tumah at all. What's the problem if the Amei Aretz touch it? And the answer is Hai Nami Metalto Mole Verekamu. As a matter of fact, the Shulchan is something that's moved around both empty and full. Kiddurish, I mean, namely, sometimes they move it when the Lechem Aponim is on it. Kiddurish Lakish, like Rish Lakish explains. The Amrish Lakish, my dichtiv ala Shulchan Atahar. Let's step back a minute. We're saying that the Shulchan is able to be Makabel Tumah. How do we know that? Well, the Pasuk calls it HaShulchan HaTahar, the Shulchan that has to be, the Shulchan that is Tahar. Miklal Shehu Tameh. Now, the implication is you have to be careful to keep it Tahar. You have to be careful that it doesn't, not to allow it to become Tameh. Well, you have the same question. V'amai creates also the Nachasu, the Enim Makabel Tumah. So Rish Lakish is pointing out you have the question not only on the Mishnah, you have the question on the Pasuk. Why is it calling it HaShulchan HaTahar? By the way, the Menorah is also called a Menorah Tahora, but that's different. The Menorah is made out of metal. There's no question it's Makabel Tumah, but a Menorah Tahora means that it's made out of pure gold. The Shulchan is not made out of pure gold, after all. It's made out of wood plated with gold. So why do we call it a Shulchan Tahor, implying that it's Makabel Tumah? So Ela Malamich Magbihinoisei. So this teaches us that on the Yavim Tovim, they would lift it up. Umarin Bo La'Oleh Regalim Lachem Aponim. They would show the Jews who came on Aliyah L'Regel, they would show them the Lachem Aponim on the Shulchan. So the point is, it is picked up with the Lachem Aponim on it. So now it's more like a sack that it's picked up with its contents on it, with the Lachem Aponim on it. So that's why it's Makabel Tumah. So they would pick it up and they would show it to the Oleh Regel. Ve'omrim lahem, they would tell them, Re'uchi baschem, l'fnei hamokim, look how precious you are to Hashem, siluka kisiduroi. When the Lachem Aponim is taken off the Shulchan, which after that they would take off the Lachem Aponim and distribute it among the Kohenim, kisiduroi, it's just as fresh and just as hot as it was when they put it on. Now remember, they put it on one Shabbos and they take it off the following Shabbos. So it sits on the Shulchan for a week. And they're showing them the nest. That nevertheless, it's still fresh. You would expect it sitting there for a week. You would expect it to spoil. You certainly wouldn't expect it to be fresh. At least it would be stale. But they show them the nest that it was not. And how do we know that it was in fact fresh? The Amar Rabbi Shur ben Levi, nest gadol nasa b'lechem aponim, a big nest happened with it. Kisidure kach silukai, just as fresh and hot as it was when they put it on the Shulchan, it was just as fresh when they took it off. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Losum lachem choyim b'yoyim hilachay." This is a part of this, when David is running away from Shaul. At one point, he comes to Nob, which is where the Mishkan is located at the time, and he asks Achimelech the Kohen Gadol for some food because he's starving. Achimelech tells him there's nothing else available except lachem upon him, and the pasuk describes the lachem upon him with the words "Losum lachem choyim," to place hot bread b'yoyim hilachay, on the day that it was taken off the Shulchan. So we see, in other words, that when it was taken off, it was just as hot as when they first put it on. Now, how exactly are they showing the people that? I mean, the people, the pastors, aren't all coming close enough to actually be able to see it. So Tosfos actually says that, fine, they would see that it was fresh. They wouldn't necessarily see that it was hot. In fact, Tosfos says it wasn't necessary. Tosfos discusses, was it necessarily hot? After all, it was baked Erev Shabbos. The Pashtus says it's not still going to be hot even when they put it on the Shulchan on Shabbos, let alone when they take it off a week later. So Tosfos says, okay, maybe what they did is maybe they kept it in the oven until Shabbos morning and then they took it out. So maybe then when they put it on the Shulchan, it was in fact hot because they kept it in the oven in order to retain its heat. But primarily, Tosfos says they would show the people that it's soft, which they could do that easily enough. I mean, all you have to do, for example, is you stick a finger into it someplace and show that you're able to stick your finger into it and that the surface is soft. But Advaz says also what it could be is everybody saw the lachem aponim on the shulchan. Then everybody saw them taking off the same lachem aponim and distributing it to the koyanim to eat. So everybody could go over to the koyanim and see that in fact the lachem aponim that they're eating is fresh. So that would be another way that Advaz says. With that said, the Ritva has a different explanation. The Ritva says not only it was hot, but it was so hot that it was steaming, and you could actually look. The people could be looking from a distance at the shulchan, and they would actually see steam rising off the lachem aponim, even though it's been sitting on the shulchan since the previous Shabbos. So whatever the case, the point is that they were picking up the shulchan with the lachem aponim on it to show to everybody. Therefore, for that reason, the shulchan is indeed like a sack, and therefore it is makabel tumah, which is why our Mishnah was saying that they would warn the kohenim, the amei ha'aretz, not to touch it. Okay, the Gemara asks, but tibuk li mishum tzipui, don't we have a different reason to say that the shulchan would be makabel tumah? Even before we asked that it shouldn't be makabel tumah because the kli eitz also a nachas. Now we're taking the opposite view. Maybe it should be makabel tumah whether we pick it up or not, because it's plated. It's plated with gold after all, and gold metal kalim are makabel tumah whether you pick them up or not. In fact, we learn in a Mishnah. Hashulchan va'dulpaki shenifchasu, a regular table or a dulpaki. Rashi describes that a dulpaki is kind of like a folding chair. It's usually covered with leather, but here we're going to talk about where you put marble on top of it. So the point is, Rashi doesn't mean a chair as in like what you sit on. It's more like a card table or a serving table or something. And the Rambam also similarly explained that a dulpaki is like a buffet or a serving table or something. Anyways, shenifchasu, if the top of them caved in, so now you can't really use them as a table anymore, or shechipan b'shayish, or if you covered the top of them with marble, which marble is not makabel tumah, in general, stoneware is not makabel tumah, and marble, of course, is a type of stone. The sheer behem makam anachas kosos, but you still have on the tabletop, you still have enough room to put cups. So you still have part of the tabletop is still functional. It hasn't caved in, or part of it has not been covered with marble. Part of it is still bare wood, and enough room to be able to put cups. Tomei, then it's still makabel tumah. Because you can still use it for the original purpose. Rabbi Yehuda says you need a larger area. You need enough of a place not only to put cups, but also to be able to put slices of bread and meat. Otherwise, you can't really consider it a table. Anyway, the point is, we see, therefore, that if you have, so this chair-like table, as Rashi is describing it, it would have been makabel tumah, but now because you covered it with marble, it's not. So we see that the marble helps take away that it can't be makabel tumah anymore. All the more so it should be the other way around, says Rashi, that if you have a wooden keli that is plated with gold, and gold is makabel tumah, then it should be makabel tumah. The entire surface of it is plated with gold, so it should be makabel tumah. So that's reason enough for the shulchan to be makabel tumah, whether you pick it up or not. Why aren't we mentioning that point? V'chitema shiny atishitim the chashivi v'leibatli. So you're going to answer, maybe the difference is the shulchan was made out of expensive wood. It was made out of atishitim, which is an important, expensive kind of wood, and maybe therefore it's not bottled for the gold. Well, hanicha le shlokish. Well, that would work out according to the shlokish's understanding. He says that the Mishnah that we just quoted from Kalim that talked about a table that you covered with marble is only applying to Kalim of Aksalagim that come from overseas. Axalagim, the pashtos is what you would understand. As Rashi explains, atze axalagim means some kind of wood, which is not particularly choshev. Tosfos says maybe axalagim is the name of a place where they import such wood from. Whatever the case, Rish Lakish says that when you have a table made out of that kind of wood, then sure, if you cover it with marble, then it's not then, and you covered the entire thing, then it's not makabel tuma anymore, because then the wood is bottled to the marble. Ava beklaim masmim loy batli, but continues Rish Lakish, if the table was made out of masmim, which is a more important kind of wood. The Gaonim bring a possibility that masmim might be what's called in English ebony, which is a very hard, very dark wood. They use it for like really fancy furniture. So then Rish Lakish is saying, if the table is made out of masmim, loy batli, then even if you cover it with marble, it's not bottled because the wood is so important. Well then, shapir, well then that would answer it. Since the shulchan is made out of atzei shittim, which is also an important kind of wood, then Rish Lakish would say, therefore, the fact that you plated it with gold doesn't make a difference, and that the wood is not bottled to the gold. Therefore, as a wooden keli, it wouldn't be makabel tuma unless you pick it up mole v'reikon, as we said before. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that even if it's made out of masmim wood, even if it's made out of expensive wood, still the wood is bottled to the covering. So in the case of that mission, the wood is bottled to the marble. Therefore, the table is not makabel tuma. In our case over here, we would be saying that the wood is bottled to the gold. Therefore, it would be makabel tuma. Then what are you going to say? Why do we need a reason that the shulchan was picked up to say that it's makabel tuma? It should be makabel tuma just on the basis of the gold plating. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, it doesn't matter what kind of wood is underneath the gold. Either way, it's bottled. So you're going to make a distinction maybe between a plating that does that oymed and one that's not. So you would say, Rashi explains that oymed means it's not held on with nails. So you would say that the shulchan and the Beis Hamikdash, maybe the gold plating was not held on with nails, therefore it would fall off easily. Whereas maybe the Mishnah and Kalim is talking about when you attach the marble to the wood with nails and therefore it stands and therefore it stays on. Tosfos gives a different explanation of Oymed. Tosfos brings exactly two explanations. One is that now we know how was the Oren made in the Mishkan. So we know it wasn't that, even though the Pasuk says it's a piece of zahav toho, you should plate it. But we know that the Yerushalmi actually holds that it was literally plated the way you plate wood. But the Bavli says that not. They had the famous thing Sholosh Aronis Osa Betzalel, that you had Betzalel made three boxes and they fit one inside the other. They nested one inside the other. So Tosfos says maybe it was the same thing with the Shulchan. Then you had the wood Shulchan. Then you had on the outside of it was a plating of gold, but not really a plating, but rather a Shulchan shaped piece of gold that would slide over it, and another Shulchan shaped piece of gold that would slide on the inside of it. Well, therefore, it's not actually attached. So that would be actually similar to Rashi's explanation that it wasn't held on with nails. Another explanation that Tosfos says is, listen, marble is very thick and very heavy. So therefore, it's Omen Me'elov in the sense that even if you took away the wooden table, the marble would still be strong enough to stand on its own, as opposed to maybe the gold plating of the Shulchan was thin enough that it wouldn't stand on its own. You would need the Shulchan underneath it in order to hold it up. Anyway, so if you're going to try to make a distinction between that, between whether the plating is held on with nails or not, or whether the plating is substantial enough to stand up for itself or not, can't be. We find that Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan this very question. When you're saying, Rabbi Yochanan, that either way the wood is always bottled to the covering, are you talking about when the covering is oymed or not, held on with nails or not, according to Rashi, and according to Tosfos, the second explanation, strong enough to stand by itself or not? And also, many times a table, a regular table, that is, we're not even talking about the one in the Mishkan, has a rim around it to keep things from falling off. So are you talking about red? Are you talking about only if the levizvizav, only if the rim around the edge is also covered, or is it even if it's not covering the rim, still the wood is bottled to the covering? But Amalei and Rabbi Yechanan tells him, doesn't matter whether the plating is oimid or not. Doesn't matter whether you covered the rim or not. Either way, the wood is always bottled to the covering. And unless, as we said in the Mishnah there, unless you have a small part, unless you have enough of the table left uncovered to be able to put cups or plates of bread and meat, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then it's not makabel truma. And in our case, the other way around, since gold is makabel truma, then since the whole shulchan was plated with gold, then it should be makabel truma, according to Rabbi Yechanan, for that reason alone. We don't care, according to Rabbi Yechanan, what the shulchan is made out of. We don't even care whether what kind of wood it's made out of, whether cheap wood or expensive wood. We don't care whether the covering, the gold, is oimid or not oimid. Either way, it should be makabel truma. So why are we saying that it's only makabel truma? Because you pick it up and show it to the oiler rebbe. So the Gemara answers, Ela shiny shulchan derachmana kavya eight. No, the reason why the shulchan would otherwise not be makabel truma, and why you need a special posuk to tell you that it is because the posuk calls it wood. So even after it's plated with gold, the posuk still refers to it as wood. Dichtiv, you have a posuk in Yechezkel, hamizbeach eight. The mizbeach, now we don't mean the actual mizbeach itself. Tosfos brings actually from Targum Yonasan on the posuk, even though on the surface we're talking about the mizbeach, which would be the mizbeach hazahav, but really we're actually talking about the shulchan, which is located near the mizbeach. In the heichal, there were three kelim. You have the shulchan on the north side, the menorah on the south side, and the mizbeach hazahav in between them. And the mizbeach hazahav was basically on the midpoint, but it was slightly closer to the shulchan than to the menorah. So that when it says the mizbeach, it doesn't mean the mizbeach, it means the shulchan, which is near the mizbeach. So why it calls it the mizbeach, we're going to talk about in a minute in the Gemara. Anyway, so it says hamizbeach eats, shalosh, it calls it wood. So even though it's plated with gold, it's still called wood. Shalosh amis gavoya, it's 3 amis tall. V'orka shtayim amis, its length is 2 amis. Tosfos, by the way, in a different place, Menachas wonders, the shulchan was not 3 amas tall. The pasuk in Parshas Truma, when it describes the kelim, says that the shulchan was only 2.5 amas tall. So Tosfos says maybe it means including the sniffing. We know that you had next to the shulchan, you had those frames into which they stuck. The half tubes. You have the shulchan went as follows. You have the lachem aponim is on the shulchan, but you can't just put the lachem aponim. You can't just pile 6 lachem aponim one on top of the other. They would break. So they had a whole contraption over there where between one lechem and the next they had three half tube shaped things made out of gold. So they would help hold up each one, and then those half tubes were held up in turn. Those were supported by frames that went on the side of the shulchan that went from the floor up to above, up to higher than the height of the shulchan. They're called in the pasuk over there in Parshas Truma. They're called ksoisev and menach yosev. There's actually Rashi mentions in the pasuk over there is a machlokas. Which one is which? Does ksoisev mean the half tubes and menach yosev means the frames, or the other way around? Ksoisev means the frames and menach yosev means the half tubes. Whatever the case, the point is Tosfos says over there that maybe that's what we mean when we say three amas tall. Anyway, but orka shtayim amos, the length of it is 2 amos. Umikta oisav loy, the corners of it are made of the same material as it. In other words, they didn't make the corners of it. They didn't make the corners and attach them afterwards. They were carved out to begin with as part of the shulchan. But orka the kiroisav eight, the full length of the shulchan, meaning the tabletop and the walls of it, were made out of wood. By Daber Eli, Zah Shulchan, Ashelef Nehashem, and he spoke to me. This is Yechezkel describing the Malach that's going around and guiding him around the third base of Mikdash, and he spoke to me. This is the table that is before Hashem. So we see he's talking about the Shulchan, even though he begins with the word Hamizbeah, he really means the Shulchan. And therefore, so we're saying that even though the Shulchan is made of wood plated with gold, but the Posit calls it eight, meaning that it's wood all by itself. So therefore, as a wooden keli, it wouldn't be makabel tuma unless you pick it up. Mole v'reikon, and that's as we said before, since they do pick up the shulchan when it's full of lachem upon him and show it to the people, then therefore it's makabel tuma. But were it not for that, it wouldn't be makabel tuma. So the Gemara asked, by the way, posak the mizbeach b'sim b'shulchan. Why is it the posik is beginning with the word mizbeach and ending with the shulchan? So fine, we're talking, the whole posik is talking about the shulchan, as Targum Yonason says, but why does it begin by saying the word hamizbeach? So Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, the Amitavayu, so both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish say, Bizman shebeis mikdash kayim, mizbeach mechaper al adam. As long as the mizbeach was standing, as long as the beis mikdash was standing, the mizbeach was mechaper for a person. Achshav shulchan shel adam mechaper olav, whereas nowadays a person's table is mechaper for him. In what way is a person's table mechaper? Rashi says by doing achnosas orchim. And Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Sanhedrin in Perek Chelek that talks about the greatness of achnosas orchim and giving orchim food, where it says over there, the Gemara mentions over there, that even Micha, the infamous Micha who made Pesel Micha, the Gemara says the Malachim over there wanted to punish him. His house was actually so close to Mishkan Shiloh, it says over there, that the smoke from the Korbanos that he brought to his idol would actually mix, would actually intermingle with the smoke from the Korbanos that had been brought in Mishkan Shiloh. So the Malachim were very angry at Micha, and they would have had him punished. But Hashem tells them, you know what? Micha is a great machnis odach, and he gives food to everybody who comes his way, so therefore I'm not going to punish him. So we see the greatness of, how giving people food, legima, as the Gemara calls it over there, as Tosfos quotes, is a great thing. It's mechaper for a person's aveiros. So that's one reason why a person's shulchan is mechaper for him. Marsha, in a couple of other places, discusses other reasons why. First of all, the person says divrei Torah by his table, so that helps be mechaper for him. But also, Marsha, it mentions a very interesting point in Bava Basra. The Gemara talks about over there that there's various things that a person is supposed to do in order to remember the Churban. One of those various things that Chacham made that a person is supposed to do or not do, Zeichel HaChurban. One of them is that when a person is setting his table and he's setting out all the dishes and all the food that usually would be there, he should leave one out and it'll be conspicuous that it's missing as Zeichel HaChurban. There should be one thing that you would expect to see on the table and is not as Zeichel HaChurban. So therefore, Marsha says when a person does that, when he deprives himself of putting that one thing on the table, that's like bringing a korban. And therefore, in that sense, that's like the mizbeach. In a case, so that's why the pasuk starts by describing it as hamizbeach and then finishes zeh shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. And the bottom line is that we're saying though that the shulchan is mekabel, that even according to Rabbi Yochanan, that when a keli is plated, then we go according to the plating. Nevertheless, that's with the exception of the shulchan because the pasuk calls it eitz. Actually, the Rambam learns our Gemara to be saying that the Rambam learns that any plated keli, we don't go according to the plating. What the Rambam learns is that all plated kelim are not makabel tumah. The way we were learning our Gemara so far is there's a difference between whether they're covered with marble, which is not makabel tumah, versus gold, which is, and we're discussing over here why is the gold not making it be makabel tumah. The Rambam actually learns that any kind of plated keli, we say whether it's plated with something that's makabel tumah or whether or not, either way, the plating doesn't make a difference. And it's not makabel tumah, because it's plated. So the Rambam would understand our Gemara differently. And in fact, the Raavad disagrees with him, and many of the Noisa Kalim of the Rambam have a bit of a hard time explaining how the Rambam would understand our Gemara. In fact, I think one of the maybe it's the Raavad or somebody else. I know the Rosh actually argues with the Rambam on this. He says apparently the Rambam learned the Mishnah, but he didn't learn the Gemara. But the Kesef Mishnah and the various other Noisa Kalim on the Rambam deal with how exactly the Rambam would understand our Gemara. Okay, going on, the Mishnah had said Kol HaKelim Shem Mikdash Yesh Lehem Shniyim Mechuvah. And he said that all the Kalim in the Mishmikdash, they had duplicates and triplicates of them. In case they become Tamei, then they can use the duplicates instead. But we said that all the Kalim require Tevila, except for the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, except for the Mizbeach HaZohav and the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. And the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Eliezer had said in the Mishnah, Mipneshein Kekarka, because they're considered like the ground. Because it says Mizbeach HaDama Tassali. So that's what Gemara is going to explain. Mizbeach HaNechoshes, Mizbeach HaDama Tassali. So that mizbeach is called a mizbeach of earth. Since earth is not makabel tuma, neither is that mizbeach. So here's where Tosfos discusses the point that we brought up before, that the fact is that in the Beis Hamikdash they had a mizbeach made out of stones. But still, what it is, in other words, that since the one that Moshe made was meant to be, instead of in the future, they would have one made out of stones, which is not makabel tuma, therefore the one of Moshe, even though Mizbeach Adama primarily is talking about the fact that eventually you're going to build a Mizbeach made out of stones, but nevertheless, we can learn that it also means that Moshe's Mizbeach made out of wood plated with gold is not makabel tuma either. And Mizbach HaZahav, where do we see that Mizbeach HaZahav is not makabel tuma? So dichtiv ha-menorah v'ha-mizbachos. You have a pasuk that describes that the Levim, or that the Bnei Kohos in particular, are in charge of transporting the menorah and the mizbachos, in plural, itkush mizbachos zelazeh. So we have a hekesh between one mizbeach and another. If the one mizbeach is not makabel tuma, then neither is the other one. Even though the reason of it being Mizbach HaDama doesn't apply to the Mizbeach HaZahav, but nevertheless the hekesh tells us that it's not makabel tuma either. Then the Mishnah had said, that the Chachamim said to Rabbi Eliezer, because they're plated. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Didn't we just talk about that? On the contrary, because they're plated, they should be able to be makabel tuma. So what do the Chachamim say? So Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's not makabel tuma because they're kakarka. What are the Chachamim saying? And because it's plated, that would be a reason that it should be makabel tuma. Ema, so you're fine. You have to fix up the Mishnah. But Chachamim mitamin mipnei shein mitzupin. You're right. The Chachamim would say that no, we disagree not only with your limud from the word Mizbach Adama, we disagree with the din that you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer. You say the Mizbeach is not makabel tuma. We say it is, the Mizbeachos in plural are not makabel tuma. We say they are because they're plated with metal, and because of the plating, they're makabel tuma, like we discussed before. That's one possibility. The Iboy Sema, Rabbanan L'Rabbi Eliezer Ka'amri. The other possibility is that when the Chachamim say Neishen Mitzupin, they're telling Rabbi Eliezer, think of it according to your logic. My Daita, what are you thinking? They would be Mekabel Tuma Mishum De Mitzupin because they're plated, and therefore you need the Pasuk Mizbach Adama to tell us that they're not. No. Mivta Bato Tzipuyan Gabayu. The plating is bottled to them, and therefore we don't care about the plating. Therefore, we focus on the fact that they're made out of wood. And since, unlike the shulchan, which we said before, is picked up, those mizbeches are never meant to be picked up and moved, except of course when they're traveling in the midbar. Then therefore they're considered kli eitz osur nachas, and therefore they're not makabel tuma. So according to that, mipnei shein mitzupin is the Chachamim telling Rabbi Eliezer a reason you're thinking because they're mitzupin, they're makabel tuma, whereas in fact, really, they're not. So because, as we said before, the pasuk calls them eights. So now here's where you have Rashi versus the Rambam. Here where Rashi is saying that, in other words, that even without them being plated, the plating is bottle. And since, as we said before, the pasuk calls them eights, then therefore they're not makabel tuma. As opposed to the Rambam would learn that it means that in general, plated kalim are not makabel tuma. There's a sicha, one of the Rebbe's hadronim for Masechta Megillah, where he discusses in Chelek Tzayin, he discusses this point. In particular, why is the Rambam forced to explain the Gemara in such an odd way, which, as we're saying, you know, the Noisa Kalim have a hard time explaining how the Rambam would fit this into the words of our Gemara. It seems much more straightforward according to Rashi. And so the Rebbe explains that the Rambam would say, since Rebbe Eliezer was a Talmud of Beis Shammai, as we find in different places in Shas, therefore he follows the general Shitta of Beis Shammai, and the Rebbe goes and discusses at great length in the Sikha over there how we often find that Beis Shammai looks at the generality of something and Beis Hillel looks at the details. So therefore, so over here, Rebbe Eliezer would say, you look at the generality of it. It's made out of wood, therefore it's a wooden keli, and wooden kelim are able to be makabel tuma. Therefore, we don't care about the plating, not the detail, which we're not looking into. Whereas the Chachamim are saying that no, that you have to look at the details as well. The fact is, the detail is that it's plated, and therefore you have to take that into consideration as well. And then the Rebbe goes on to discuss how you have examples of that, of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's shittis in that throughout Shas. Giving an example from every one of the Shisha Sedarim. So the Gemara continues. Amar Abba Bahu, Amar Abba Lazar. Talmidei Chachamim ein ur shel gehenem shel letes behem. Talmid Chachamim, even if they have to wind up in Gehenna, the fire of Gehenna has no power over them. Kavachomim is salamandra. And we can know that by a kavachomer from the salamandra. The salamandra is a creature which is created from fire. Rashi describes you keep a fire burning in a place continuously for 7 years. Eventually, they'll come out from it a creature called a salamandra. And that creature, if a person smears himself with the blood of it, then they will be impervious to fire. They'll be fireproof. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that you used to have the idol Moloch, where the ritual of serving Moloch was Maveris Bonav Ba'esh, where a person would have his children pass through a fire in honor of Moloch. And the Gemara mentions over there that Ochaz, one of the kings of Yehuda, who was a terrible Rasha, was worshipping this Moloch, and he wanted to give his son Chizkiah to have to go through that ritual. But Chizkiah's mother, ahead of time, smeared him with blood from the salamandra, and that way he was able to survive it. Anyway, so we make a kabachoymer from the salamandra, and we say that to show that the Talmid Chachamim are impervious to the fire of Gehenna. Umas salamandra shetoldas eshi, madach the salamandra, which itself comes from fire, and yet hasoch midoma ein ursha lebesvoy, and a person who smears his skin with his blood, then the fire won't have any ability to affect him. Talmid Chachamim shekol gufan esh. Well, then the Talmid Chachamim, where their entire body is fire, because the whole mitzvah is the Torah that they learn. Dichtiv haloi koy dvori koesh ne'um Hashem, as the pasuk says, aren't my words like fire? Says Hashem. Alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that they are immune to the fire of Gehenna. So even if they have to wind up in Gehenna, they still are not going to be affected by the fire of it. Then the Gemara continues, Omer Rish Lakish, Ein Ursh of Gehenna Sheletes Meposhe Yisroel. Now, by the way, we did have, Marsha points out, earlier in our Masechta, we had Acher, where smoke came out of his grave for a while. So in that sense, there you have a Talmid Chacham, where the fire of Gehenna did have a certain power on him. But he was a special situation. He was much worse off than most other Talmid Chachamim, because after all, he was Yedei Ribonu Meskaven Limerdboi. He knew Hashem so closely from having been one of the Chachamim who went into the paradise, and still he went bad. So in fact, there was a Tosfos over there where Reb Meir says that we have to save Acher, if nothing else, even if he himself is not a Sefer Torah anymore, even if he is Metzius, is not Torah, at least if nothing else, he's like a cover for a Sefer Torah, where the din is, when you save in the Sefer Torah, you have to save the cover as well, you have to save the mantle, so if nothing else, Acher is no worse than a mantle. But ordinarily, we're saying the regular Talmid Chachamim, then the fire of Gehenna has no power over them, as we learned from the Salamandra. And the Gemara continues, Omer Shlokish, Ein Ursho Gehenim Shevetes Poshe Yisrael. The fire of Gehenim has no power over Poshe Yisrael, over Jews who committed Averis, Kavachoymim Mizbach HaZahav. And then a Kavachoymim from the golden Mizbeach that we were just discussing. Now, Tosfos, by the way, for over here, points out, there is a category called Poshe Yisrael B'gufon. There is a category where they were Poshe Yisrael with their bodies, where the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah about them that they remain in Gehenna pretty much indefinitely. So Tosfos says, okay, we're talking about over here regular Poshim. We're not talking about Poshe Yisrael B'gufon. One thing, by the way, the Gemara mentions over there, that one definition of Poshe Yisrael B'gufon is Karkafta de Manach Tfilin, a head that didn't put on Tfilin, which is where we got the concept of a Karkafta of putting on Tfilin on somebody for the first time, where that makes them, now they're not in that category anymore, and that's why we make such a big deal when we have a chance to put Tfilin on a Karkafta. Also Tosfos mentions, by the way, in Eruvin, if we're saying over here that the fire of Gehenna has no power over Talmid Chachamim, and it also has no power over Poshe Yisrael, so what's the advantage of the Talmid Chacham over the Poshe Yisrael? And Tosfos says over there the difference is the Poshe Yisrael, they might have to be exposed to the fire of Gehenna. It's not going to burn them, but it will blacken their faces. Whereas the Talmid Chachamim don't even have to go through that. Anyway, so continues the Gemara. So kavachomim mizbach hazahav, ma mizbach hazahav she'en olav el ka'ovi dinar zahav. The mizbeach hazahav has on it a plating of gold, only the thickness of a gold dinner. And yet, kamashonim ena urshalat despite. And yet, for hundreds of years, twice a day, you're making a fire on it to burn the ketores, and the fire never overpowered it. It never melted through. None of the gold ever melted away, and the wood itself underneath was never burnt. The Tosfos, in fact, brings that when Moshe was told to build the Mizbeach Hazav, he was wondering about that. How is it possible? Such a thin layer of gold, and it's not going to burn through. And Hashem tells him, you know what? Listen, the same thing as by the Sneh, where it didn't burn. So the same way over here, it won't burn either. By the way, the Mizbeach HaChitzon, you didn't have that problem because we said before the Mizbeach HaChitzon was filled up with dirt. It didn't have a top. They filled it up with dirt. So obviously, therefore, there was no problem that it's going to catch on fire. But the Mizbeach Hazav, yeah. So it has a thickness of a gold dinner of gold, and still the fire can't affect it. Poshi Yisrael Shemalei and Mitzvahs Kerimin. Well, then the sinner is among the Jewish people who really are full of mitzvahs as a pomegranate. And we know that because the pasuk says Kefelach Harimon Rakosech. Your Rakosech, where the simple meaning of Rakosech means your temples, like the sides of your head, or like a slice of pomegranate. But so in Poshet Pshat, then you have the whole Shir Shirim is a dialogue between two lovers, between a man and a woman who are deeply in love with each other, and he's praising her and describing her appearance. And at one point he says Kefelach Harimon Rakosech, your temples are like. They're red and healthy looking like a slice of pomegranate. But the whole thing, the whole Shir HaShirim is really a metaphor for the love between the Eibishter and the Jewish people. And the word Rakosech is Altikri Rakosech El Rekonin Shabach. They don't read Rakosech, but rather Rekonin, the empty ones among you. So even the empty ones are Kerimon. They're still full like a pomegranate, like a mitzvah, like a pomegranate. So how much more so that the fire of Gehenna should not be able to do anything to them? A few weeks back, and in one of the weekly Fabrengans, they had a little vort over there. There was a story about a Satmar Chosid who didn't have any children, so his Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel Shalom Shalom, sent him to our Rebbe for a bracha. And so he was in Yechidus. The Rebbe asks him, so recently I know your Rebbe had Yortzeit. What did he talk about? He says he made a siyum on Masechta Chagiga. So what did he talk about? So he says, he talked about this line over here. And he said, and our Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel, said, I don't understand. If they're Posh Yisrael, how can they be Malay Mitzvahs Kerimon? What? The Satmar had said, how can we call them Malay Mitzvahs Kerimon if they're Posh Yisrael? Yeah. And the Rebbe said, you know, I learned that Gemara, but I was wondering the other way around. If they're Malay Mitzvahs Kerimon, how can we call them Posh Yisrael? So the Rebbe was, our Rebbe was always looking out for the best of her, for the best in a yid. Anyway, so there is a sicha. There's another hadron on Chagiga that the Rebbe made, also in Chelek Tzayin, where the Rebbe discusses our Gemara at some length of the year. Among other things, why are we learning the Talmud Chacham from a salamandra? A salamandra is not even a kosher creature. It's a type Tosfos brings that it's a type of lizard or a type of mouse or something. Why are we, if we're mentioning this in connection with Mizbeach HaZahav, then why don't we bring the second statement about the Poshi Yisrael first, and then the one about the Talmud Chachamim? Why do we need two different metaphors for them anyway? Anyway, the Kitzur, the Rebbe explains that like this. The Talmud Chacham, as we're saying, his whole Metzius is Torah. He's completely permeated with Torah. So there, now, on the other hand, though, sometimes you can have, unfortunately, a person learns Torah, so he's like the salamandra that is in fire for years and years, but what comes out in the end, the non-kosher creature. The same way, you can have a person who's learning Torah for many years, but unfortunately, he does it in a way where he doesn't come closer to Hashem, where on the contrary, it feeds his yeshurus and whatever, and he ends up becoming like a chayat meya. Nevertheless, though, we're still saying that still, the fact that he's permeated with Torah saves him from the fire of Gehenna. Then, on the other hand, you have the Poshi Yisrael. Now, they don't learn Torah. However, they do mitzvahs. Their mitzvahs, we can't say, is embedded within them. You can't say that their mitzvahs is mitzvahs. A person's mitzvahs is not mitzvahs. Rather, the mitzvahs are like a plating, like a covering over them. So therefore, we're comparing them to the Mizbeach HaZahav, and we're saying, just like the gold of the Mizbeach HaZahav protects them, the same way their mitzvah is a covering over them that helps protect them from the effects of Gehenna. Marsha, in fact, points out that that's the point. In other words, mitzvahs are considered precious as gold, therefore we're comparing it to the gold plating of the Mizbeach HaZahav. But that's why we have two different metaphors, and that's why first it talks about the Talmid Chachamim, meaning we're talking about obviously Talmid Chachamim who did Averis, but they have the advantage of being Talmidei Chachamim, only then do we discuss the ones who they don't have that advantage, but they have the advantage of being full of mitzvahs, and therefore that protects them like armor that protects them against the fire, that protects them against the fire. So in fact, in that other sikha that we talked about before, about the Mipnei Shein Mitzupin, that Rebbe ends up explaining, one of the points you have over there, is one of the machlokas in Bishamai Bishillel, where we see that Bishamai looks at the generality of things and Bishillel looks at the specifics, is we're going to have in a few months from now, Bez Hashem and Ksubas, we're going to have the machlokas Bishamai Bishillel by a chasana. What do you say in praise of the Kala? Where Bishamai says, Kala kamos shehi, you just praise the Kala however she is, you don't exaggerate. And Bishillel says, Kala novach suda. And this is an example. Bishamai says, you look at the generality. In general, she looks very plain, so therefore, that's what you have to say. Whereas Bishamai says, you have to consider, her chosan, after all, saw something in her, that's why he's marrying her. So therefore, when you look at that particular, then you realize that she really is, in his eyes, kalanov achsoda, and therefore you can feel that as well, and therefore that ties in with this, that every yid is, after all, a kalanov achsoda, because after all, the Eved Shtet shows every yid on an individual level. And so that ties in with what we're saying over here about the Talmidei Chachamim and the Poshei Yisrael, that nevertheless, there's still ones chosen by Hashem, and therefore we're saying they have that protection from Hashem, and that ties in more generally with what we were talking about at the end of the Masechta over here. How even the Amiya Oretz, we still during the Yomim Tovim, there are times when we consider that they're Tahar just as much as the most careful Chaver, because we're all part of one people, we're all part of one Sibur. Hadron Alachoyim of Hakodesh, or Slikal on Masechta Chagiga, and with that we've also finished Seder Moed. Hadron alach seder moed v'hadrach alon. Mazel tov, everyone.